All right, back on the Young Turks. Power panel time.
It's gonna drop. It's gonna drop.
No. Okay.
No, we don't
have it. Let's
move on. No.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. I said it way more forcefully in the second hour. Can I get that noted on the record?
I'm just glad you said it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right. Tom Zawaki writes in. Okay, we're up to 8 people at this non-meeting meeting. When do we hear Putin was on a Skype call with them? Danger Carlos Danger writes in. So,
I like that.
Yeah. So is Trump's lawyer taking a page out of Donald's playbook and moving on that guy like a bitch? So Trump's lawyer might be crazier than Trump. I Am Sock says, so the Trumps are the worst poker players on the face of the planet. And it goes on and on. Okay, and members of the day are Valerie Johnson and Joseph Fletcher. Okay, so Anna, Ambria, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Although we didn't have it dropping, you are the next power panel, etc. Okay. And in fact, I want to start with two things, two quotes from Trump we didn't get to in the last hour, real quick. They cracked me up, so I wanted to share it with you guys. Mm-hmm. In the midst of his rambling talk with the press on Air Force One on his way to France, Trump said, "I'm a tremendous fracker."
Did he really say that?
Yes, literally. Okay.
What does that even mean? Like, he does the fracking himself? Like, he puts the muscle into it?
Tremendously.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. He's like, "Oh, Hillary Clinton, she wouldn't have done any fracking." Okay. And I came in and I did Keystone XL, I did Dakota Access, and I got a tremendous credit for that. And I'm a tremendous fracker.
The shoulder action that you're giving is.
I like the shoulder, but you gotta do the shoulder and like the weird hand gesture simultaneously.
Look, I'm a tremendous fracker. Okay?
Yes, that's great.
Okay. I'm a tremendous fracker. And then my favorite, he said, and again, when talking about energy, "We've got underneath us more oil than anybody, and nobody knew it until 5 years ago." You're telling me that nobody knew the oil that America had until 5 years ago? He is so unbelievably ignorant.
Yes.
Everybody but you knew. Anyway, all right, random stuff. All right, now let's go to his cabinet.
All right. Ugh. Betsy DeVos had a number of sessions with individuals who were either victimized by campus sexual assault or individuals who claimed that they were falsely accused of campus sexual assault. This is all part of her effort to reform Title IX and potentially roll back some of the protections that the Obama administration put in place for students who have been victimized for sexual assault. Now, earlier this week, DeVos angered advocates for victims of sexual assault by agreeing to meet with members of men's rights groups, which argue that men accused of sexual assault are treated unfairly by colleges under the Obama administration's Title IX guidance. The National Coalition for Men has a history of intimidating victims by publishing the identities of women they say made false accusations. Now, the other men's rights organization that was there is known as Stop Abusive and Violent Environments, also known as SAVE, and the Southern Poverty Law Center has actually listed them as a misogynistic organization. And honestly, I was really curious to see what kind of interaction that they had and what they shared with Betsy DeVos. And Refinery 29 actually had a really great piece where they profiled one of the men who claims that he's been falsely accused of sexual assault by his own frat brothers. And so you don't hear about situations like that often. And he's saying, I actually don't want you guys to get rid of Title IX or the protections that the Obama administration put in place. But what he does call for is increasing the burden of proof that universities need to have in order to find someone guilty, right? Now, keep in mind, the way universities handle it is separate from the way criminal courts handle it, right? So this is really over whether or not a student should be expelled or reprimanded or face any consequences for alleged sexual assault. There's a lot more. It's a very complex, twisty-turny story, but I want you guys to jump in.
Okay, so I think I agree with where you're going with it. So if Betsy DeVos said, "Hey, listen, of course we have to take it into account and address sexual assault and rape on college campuses, of course. But some small fraction of cases are false accusations. And I say that because that's a fact. It's about 2 to 10% of accusations are false, according to the people who keep stats on it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so but it exists. So let me go meet with one of these groups, and then I would pick the group that is the least crazy.
They right? don't exist, unfortunately.
Well, I hear you on that. That's right. But so. I wouldn't pick one that was on the Southern Poverty Law Center's list of groups that are misogynistic. The one that the National Coalition for Men, their founder, I read a quote from a couple of days ago on the show when she was considering doing these meetings. He said the Ray Rice thing, he's like, I'm not blaming victim.
Or victim blaming.
Victim blaming, but you know, she agitated him. And that's why he hit her. What? If you saw that tape, I mean,
he knocked her out.
He knocked her out and couldn't care less. And she did like, what do you mean agitated him? It's clear victim blaming. Right. So these are bad, bad guys that she's meeting with. If you wanted to actually address the issue and you did it in proportion to the scope of the problem, okay, all right, you know, that makes sense. I don't want guys to be falsely accused of rape.
Yeah, that's right. Look.
But we're not doing it in proportion here. And the people you're meeting with are terrible guys.
Okay. Yeah, look, the sense that I got from the way that this all went down is that, you know, her assumption or her perspective of this is that sexual assault victims are 50% and, you know, falsely accused are 50%. Right. So let's treat it like such, and I'll have my session with the sexual assault victims and then those who are falsely accused. But the reality is, look, no one wants anyone to be falsely accused, right? And it's counterproductive and devastating for everyone. Right? Sure. But at the same time, you want to ensure that you tackle a problem that continues, you know, to grow on college campuses, and that is administrators kind of brushing these things under the rug and not dealing with them. And by the way, universities are not courts. They're not looking for criminality or to convict someone. That's for the criminal court system to decide. When it comes to universities, they have to decide whether or not it makes sense to move someone into a different dorm or expel someone. And in the vast majority of cases, according to the data, the person who's accused of sexual assault doesn't get expelled, does not get moved to a different dorm. They might get asked to take like a counseling class, but that's it. Let me go into the details on that because I thought it was super interesting. We don't have a graphic for it. But the Washington Post looked at data at over 100 universities. And what they found was that very often, or more than often, they are not expelled from universities. Very often, they are told to take these counseling classes. But yeah, they're like what these groups want, the men's activist groups, is they want it to be the same burden of proof necessary in criminal court. So guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And so the universities are actually saying that makes our job impossible because we can't prove that.
And it's already tough to prove in criminal cases, right? Which also we also need to revise how we conceptualize burden of proof for criminal cases. But I think back to that earlier point about this conversation, you can't center men in a conversation where men are the primary perpetrators of sexual assault on campus. And I think also you can have multiple conversations about sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Two things can be true. There can be false accusations and there can be real sexual assault.
Right.
But to go first to and then to frame these victims as equal to other victims of sexual assault, I think is problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, it's a tough balancing act for universities, and if I was running the Department of Education, I would think, look, how do I make sure that universities don't brush this under the rug, and they have an incentive to, because what they don't want their universities to get a bad name, and if there's a lot of sexual assaults reported at a university, then they get a bad name, and less people apply, and it affects their funding and all that stuff. So I've got to stop that problem, because if someone is sexually assaulted on a college campus, we have to take it enormously seriously and make sure we get justice for that, and make sure that the victim doesn't have to face the person who did it, etc. Mm-hmm. Right? On the other hand, when they go to actually adjudicate the case, I think beyond a reasonable doubt is too tough a standard in that context. Although I don't agree that it's too tough a standard in the criminal context. I think it's the right standard, but we could disagree about that. But at the same time, I don't want the college to say, you know, if there's any evidence at all, the guy's gone, right? No, you have to have some real standard, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the same standard as a civil case by a preponderance of the evidence,
right?
Mm-hmm. Because when you go to a criminal trial, you're taking somebody's freedom away.
Mm-hmm.
And if on a case like rape, then you're going to go on a sex offender list, etc. I mean, that is as serious as you can possibly get. Now, removing somebody from college, ending their college career, is also super serious, but not to the same degree. And it's a different balancing act because you really want to protect sexual assault victims. And we have the stats. The overwhelming majority of people who accuse people of sexual assault, it actually happened. So, and you know that through the cases that have been adjudicated, etc., right? So it's not an easy balancing act, but you don't balance it 50-50. Because that's just not the reality of what's happening on campus.
And what I'm concerned about is even as they give this appearance that they're treating the situation as 50-50, which I think we all agree is kind of unfair given the statistics, behind the scenes, they don't even treat it as 50-50. Let's go to graphic 2A. DeVos's top civil rights chief, Candace Jackson, stirred outrage Wednesday when she told the New York Times that, quote, 90% of accusations fall into the category of, we were both drunk, we broke up, and 6 months later I found myself under a Title IX investigation because she just decided that our last sleeping together was not quite right. Now, she later apologized for that statement, but I mean, you apologize because you get criticism. You said something that you honestly believed, and that's a little troublesome. So,
look, it's not like those cases don't exist. When I was going to school at Penn, we literally had one of those cases where somebody said 6 months later, one of the nights in our relationship, I didn't want to have sex, but we had sex, and he didn't know it, but I'm going to call it rape now. Okay, now. I don't know all the details, and that was a long, long time ago, and maybe she had a point. But from the outside, it looked like, whoa, 6 months later, and the guy didn't even know it. It's mm-hmm. So it's not like those cases don't exist. But for her to say that 90% of the accusations fall into that category is unbelievable. But that's their mindset, that's their perspective. It's a lot of BS. These sexual assaults don't actually happen, which is super ironic because apparently Candace Jackson's also a sexual assault survivor.
Exactly.
But having gotten no empathy, just turns around to everyone else. It's like, yeah, it happened to me, but I don't believe that it happened to you. 90% of the time, I think you're making it up. Even though the stats indicate it's the exact opposite. They're telling the truth 90 to 98% of the time.
Yep. All right, moving on to other news today. There has been some justice involving an Airbnb host who discriminated against an Asian American guest by canceling her trip last minute. Now, this story actually occurred back in February. So there was a snowstorm in Big Bear where the host has this property. And a woman by the name of Dine Su was driving through the snowstorm to get to the property and enjoy a little time off, a little break with her friends. Well, at that point, apparently she called the host and things took a turn for the worst. Dine Su had driven in a snowstorm to the Airbnb rental near Big Bear, California. The host canceled the reservation as Su was close to arriving and texted her, quote, I wouldn't rent to you if you were the last person on earth. One word says it all, Asian. And then she basically responded with, well, I'm gonna let Airbnb know that you are discriminating against me and you're racist. And his response, or her response, by the way, the host is a woman. It's why we have Trump, and I will not allow this country to be told what to do by foreigners.
You know, we cover these stories, and yet to this late date, every once in a while, I still get shocked. Who hates Asians this much?
It's really fascinating. But look, I started this story by saying that there's been some justice and Airbnb did take some action. And in fact, since this is in California, lawmakers in California or officials in California took some action. So as a result, she will have to apologize to Su, comply with anti-discrimination laws, attend training, take a college level course in Asian American studies, participate in a community education panel, perform volunteer service at a civil rights organization, report rental data to the department for 4 years, and also pay $5,000 in damage. And the department that I'm talking about is the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing. And so I love this state. Okay, some of you right wingers are probably watching this like, ah, California sucks. Good, stay away from us.
They won't even let me just hate on Asians.
Yeah.
So let's understand why they did this. So you have your First Amendment right to hate Asians all you like and say it and say, oh, now because of Trump, I could hate you even more. Have at it, Hoss. But if you're running a business, you're not allowed to discriminate based on race. You know the whole thing about the civil rights movement, how they couldn't sit in some of the counters at some of the stores, and had all these different rules applied to them because they were African Americans. Well, that was the whole point of among the many points of the civil rights movement is that you can't do that. You can't have separate water fountains for colored people, as they say back then, and white people. So no, you can't say I'm going to rent my house out as part of a business enterprise, but I won't rent it to blacks or Jews or Asians or anything. And here, you cannot have a clearer admission of guilt than one word says it all, Asian.
So I use Airbnb, right? I like Airbnb a lot. And I feel like when you are sharing your information in order to rent a place, you disclose quite a bit. There's a photo involved, your name is involved. I mean, I don't know if this is an insensitive thing to say, but Dinesa doesn't really sound like a white name, right? So I don't understand why this host, first of all, it doesn't matter if you can identify the person's race or not. You're not allowed to discriminate based on laws, right? But why last minute, as she's driving through a snowstorm, did this host decide to cancel? Like, really, you didn't know this person was Asian to begin with?
One, if you're that ignorant, I mean, where does your ignorance end? She might not have noticed it. Second of all, she might have been drunk. And so, like, I'm serious. It's like the middle of the night. She's like, oh, I'm not gonna let, I said yes, but I don't want it. I don't want this stinking Asian in my house, right? Remember, it's
then don't rent your property out. Don't rent your property out. You don't like it, then don't rent it out, okay? You don't get to pick and choose which race stays in your property.
But kind of, because it still does happen, and particularly for black, you know, users of Airbnb, they're overwhelmingly declined when they apply for housing. And I think Airbnb has to revise the standards by which you can apply for. I don't know. I don't Airbnb because I don't want to be discriminated against. Because when you go to get a hotel, you don't have to, you can just check in, right? So there's no opportunity for that discrimination. But also, I don't want to stay in anyone's house who's racist because I don't want you to have my money. So this is kind of like, I'm glad she didn't stay there, right? Yeah.
So Airbnb knows this is a problem and they're trying to address it. And it looks like they're trying hard to ameliorate the problem. In this particular case, they said, look, we're going to refund your money immediately. Plus, we will give you a voucher for hotel rooms for Sa and her friends. It's not us, and we're going to try to help in every way that we can as a company. But you know, this is what people talk about when they say white privilege, because until we were having this conversation, I hadn't thought about it. If you'd asked me, do you think African Americans would get discriminated against at Airbnb? You would have forced me to think about that for the first time. And I would have probably said, I bet they do, based on all the other stories we've done about the resumes and the eBay, and if they see a black hand versus a white hand, and it's all those different studies that have been done, right? But I never thought about it, because I didn't live that experience. Whereas Amber, you think about that the first thing, right? Because everybody that you've had this experience, other people you know have had this experience. So I never thought, hey, I can go to an Airbnb or a hotel, it's my choice. Whereas for you, it's less of a choice, or you perceive that it's less of a choice.
Yeah.
And boom, that already is a privilege I had that I didn't know I had. It doesn't mean I'm rich, it doesn't mean that I live in the lap of luxury, it doesn't mean anything other than I have it a little bit better than you and I didn't even know it.
Sure. I mean, do you feel like you received the privilege of being?
Oh, they know when they see Cenk Weiger.
Right.
They say, boom, you're in, buddy.
Yeah,
no, in all seriousness, though, I mean, my name is indecipherable and unpronounceable.
Right.
So they don't know it's Cenk Uygur. And they see my wife's name, Wendy Lang. Could be Jewish, could be Chinese, could be anything, right? So we have not felt it. Doesn't mean that we didn't experience it or or that something happened and we didn't see it.
Right.
But I say this all the time, I'm super lucky. until recently, mm-hmm. I almost never faced discrimination because people couldn't quite figure out what I was. Or maybe I was super lucky and I had good people around me, and sure. I know that I grew up in a great place in New Jersey where it was very multicultural, etc. But I haven't felt any of the kind of discrimination that African Americans feel on a regular basis.
I was only discriminated against once on Airbnb, and it was by a Turkish host.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, man.
So I requested a property for my in-laws when they were coming to Los Angeles, and I saw the, you know, you see the person's identity, which is why it's like surprising to me that this host didn't know that the woman was Asian. But anyway, yeah, Kasparian is a super Armenian last name. And so I applied for it and, you know, super friendly. I have like a good rating on Airbnb, whatever.
That's right,
yeah. Yeah, immediately declined me.
Jeez.
I'm not going to blow the place up, dude. Like, just relax.
Right.
But anyway,
wow.
I mean, I didn't.
We don't
care.
Know for sure, but it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then finally, look, on this story, there is a little bit of a good ending. Not because she got fined and she has to go to these classes against her will. From what they describe of her reaction, it appears that it was a little bit of a learning experience. It reminds me of the story we did yesterday of the guy who was yelling the bigoted stuff to Muslims on the highway in Oregon. And then he was so remorseful afterwards because he got a sense of like, God, that was so stupid. Why was I doing that? They're just regular Americans like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that maybe we didn't, like, instead of being like, that's your work, that's it, it's not a $5,000 fine, it's a $50,000 fine, we're gonna bankrupt you and take your house. It was more like, let's talk about it, let's learn from it, and it seems like she's open to that. So if we expanded her way of thinking for a second, and she's into it, then that's great. That's great news. I think that's the right way to handle it.
I'm skeptical.
Okay, keep it real. So yeah, I don't want to be overly naive.
Imagine?
I don't,
you know. She takes like one college level Asian American class, whatever.
Right.
You know, and then she's like, wow. I am now in right. love with the Asian people. Like, I don't know, we'll see. We'll see.
By the way, you never know though.
You never know.
This story ends with her marrying an Asian dude.
Well,
I don't know.
Statistically, probably not. But I don't know. I teach a lot of cultural studies classes with students who walk out as ridiculous as they came in. So, and it says she agreed. Like, is this, did she have a choice of whether or not she could?
She didn't have a choice.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, she didn't have a choice. But
okay, we don't know enough. Don't make me send Jordan Charton over there and find out.
Please no. Yeah. All right, we got to take a break. So let's do that. And when we come back, the most amazing emails that people have sent to Donald Trump's Voter Fraud Commission. You don't want to miss it.
Go. Turks, Cenk, Ambria, and Anna. Captain Jinglepants writes in.
His name's today.
How do such ignorant people make it this far, let alone have property? Such stupidity and success is anti-Darwinistic. Well, it's not necessarily success. That's the thing. You know, the average white family, I think, has about $150,000 in property. By that, I don't mean just houses. I mean like bank accounts, etc. Right? And the average black family is about 11,000. So it's a legacy issue. That's how history still rains down on us. And so that's why she might have started with a gigantic advantage. And and that's why she has a property now, because she's a goddamn genius. Yeah. So anyway, Gabby Morita says, I've never experienced discrimination based on my looks, but my name, and if and when people hear me speak Spanish, oh hell yeah. So it depends. It depends on how you look, what your name sounds like.
As I've mentioned, like, I'm almost finished reading Ann Coulter's latest book because I'm about to debate her, not because I want to read her book.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A reoccurring theme, not just in her book, but in her entire career and commentary, is just this anger and rage at hearing people speak Spanish in the United States, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why does it get under your skin so much? Like, why does that bother you so much, right? I mean, if people come up to you and speak to you in Spanish and insist that you speak to them in Spanish, then I can understand getting frustrated. But if they're talking amongst themselves in their native tongue, who cares?
Well, I think that part of it is just a insecurity and a fundamental insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, you know, if somebody's talking over there and they snicker and you think, wait, were they laughing at me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ann Coulter thinks about that all the time.
But we're always laughing at you. It doesn't matter if we speak Spanish or only American, only English. Like, people laugh at you all the time.
I know, that's why she's so scared. All right, anyway, watch
Anna's and Ann's.
Oh,
and
debate.
Ann's
gold.
Debate. And Ann Coulter's debate. Go to politicon.com/TYT to get tickets. I'm also debating Ben Shapiro. By the way, let's note for the record that Ambria is in Silicon Valley, which is super badass.
Yeah, it's a
I saw you and I was like, oh my God, that's Ambria. Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Oh, thanks, guys. Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, so check that out. All right, what's next?
All right. Earlier this year, Donald Trump claimed that the only reason why Hillary Clinton received millions more in votes was because there were millions of people who fraudulently voted. Well, as a result, and of course there's been no evidence of this whatsoever, he created a voter fraud commission to investigate the issue of voter fraud. And recently that commission sent out letters to secretaries of state in all 50 states, asking them to turn over all voter information, okay? And that includes personal information about anyone who's registered to vote. Now, the officials from various states are fighting back and refusing to comply. However, the Voter Commission also, or Voter Fraud Commission, also decided to get some commentary about this issue from the public. And so they sent this message out earlier. Any member of the public wishing to submit written comments for the commission's consideration may do so via email at election integrity staff at OVP, blah, blah, blah. You guys get it. Please note that the commission may post such written comments publicly on our website, including names and contact information that are submitted. Well, they followed through on that and they have decided to publish the first batch of emails that they've received. Now, we've blocked out the personal information of these people. You don't need to know what they are. But some of these emails are so good. So good. So let me read you some. One person writes in, just fuck off already, you shit stain on democracy. And then I love the subject line, piece of shit you are, Yoda. All right, let's go to the next one. One person writes in, who the fuck are you, evil people? Kobach and Pence can eat my asshole. Fucking with voting rights is vile, obnoxious shit, and I wish anyone who is involved in this ends their lives in prison. Fuck each and every one of you. Okay, so nice, polite email. By the way, there are people who did write politely to protest what's going on. One person writes in, I pay the government a boatload of taxes, so you work for me. I think you are doing a terrible job. Explain yourself. And go ahead, you guys jump in. There's like other emails that I want to read. But
yeah, so Kris Kobach is one of the most dangerous guys in the country. And so his specialty is voter suppression. So we don't want people who traditionally vote Democratic to vote, because then Republicans will lose elections. So we're going to try to suppress the votes of people who are poor, minorities, and students. And so all of these groups that are traditionally Democratic voters. So now that winds up having a literal racist effect, because he thinks, well, blacks vote for Democrats about 90% of the time. About 67% of Latinos voted against Trump, for example. So let's make sure less Latinos and blacks vote. And so what are they, now they can't say that. So although back in the day, the guy who started, Paul Weyrich, who started some of the top right-wing organizations in the country, actually admitted in 1980 in his speech, he's like, I don't want everybody to vote. I want less people to vote. I want only our people to vote, right?
Right.
So this has been a clear pattern for decades now. They're just more brazen about it now. So instead of saying, I don't want black people to vote, they say, oh, voter fraud. Yeah, that's it. We've got a lot of voter fraud. Now, the reality is you don't. And in fact, a lot of the, even the red states that they applied to for this voter fraud commission told them, I think the state of Mississippi literally told them to go jump in the Gulf. Okay. They're like, no, it's just not true. They had Republican after Republican look into it, and they're like, we can't find the voter fraud.
Right.
You keep telling me to find it, but there isn't,
right?
Whatever they find is minuscule and usually done by Republicans.
Yeah. Right.
And so the reason they claim voter fraud is not because they are actually genuinely interested. If there was wide-scale voter fraud, we would want to stop it, right? Who wants fraudulent elections. Certainly not us. Republicans are more likely to fix elections than Democrats. Democrats seem like they don't even want to win elections, right? Whereas Republicans will do anything to win an election. True. The last thing we want is fraudulent elections. So they go, oh, I need voter ID laws so that there's no fraud committed. So you just need an ID. But people say, oh, most people have IDs. So they're like, what's the big deal? I have a driver's license. Why don't you just use a driver's license? Mm-hmm. Well, 25% of African Americans don't have driver's license. A lot of folks live in the city and they don't need a car, or they can't afford a car. So people in the cities that also mostly vote Democratic don't have driver's licenses, etc. So these laws wind up being racist. Hence, these, you know, calling them a shit stain is not coming out of nowhere. It's because people are mad because you're taking their rights away.
And wasting resources.
Yes.
Like, this is a waste of time.
Yes, all because Trump is super insecure about the fact that millions more voted for his opponent, right? He's trying to prove something. There's nothing to prove. You lost. I mean, you won. You're president, right? But you didn't get the popular vote. Move on with your life.
Right.
Well, it's not just that, though. It's because they want to set it up for the next election.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Because he barely won. And he was deeply unpopular, and he won because 85% of white evangelical voters turned out to vote, which is a stunning number. They can't repeat that number. So they got all of their guys to vote as much as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. He got 81% of that white evangelical vote. So what they need to do next is make sure the other side can't vote.
Right.
That's what this is about. So that's why when people tell him to fuck off, there's a very, very good reason why.
Absolutely.
Okay, look, we got to take a break here. Sirius Satellite Radio audience, we love you guys. We'll see you on Monday. For everybody watching on TYTnetwork.com, we'll come right back and have two more fun stories for you guys. Back on the Young Turks. I told you it'd be quick. All right, what's next, Anna?
All right. A judge has decided to throw out the conviction of a protester who had the audacity to laugh during Jeff Sessions' Senate confirmation hearing. Now, during his Senate confirmation hearing, there were a number of protesters present. And at one point, a woman by the name of Desiree Ferruz snickered or laughed after someone made a positive comment about Jeff Sessions. So let me give you the details on that. Graphic 15 first, please. Ferruz was taken into custody during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing in January after she laughed when Senator Richard Shelby from Alabama claimed Sessions had a clear and well-documented record of treating all Americans equally under the law. So he says that, she laughs, and then the authorities immediately begin to take her out, like arrest her. And her reaction as they were arresting her was part of the reason why the jury found her guilty of disorderly conduct. So let's take a look at the video and then I'll fill you in on what happened next.
Jeff Sessions, and to offer my support.
Why am I being taken out of here? This man is evil. You're evil. Do not vote for Jeff Sessions. I was going to be quiet. Now you're going to have me arrested? For what? For what? He said something ridiculous. His voting record is evil. Why am I being arrested?
Get him, girl. Anyway, fast forward to today, a DC judge has tossed out a jury's conviction of the protester who laughed during the Senate confirmation hearing, finding that the government had improperly argued during the trial that her laughter was enough to merit a guilty verdict. And the judge says, no, her laughter is not enough to merit a guilty verdict. Now, the prosecutors are saying it's not just the laughter, though, it's the way that she behaved as she was being taken out. And so it's likely that she will face a retrial.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So look, Code Pink is brave. They go and they dress up in those outfits, and sometimes they do disrupt events. The one I remember, there's a million instances of it, but when they were chasing Donald Rumsfeld around in a place, I think he was attending an event, and kept saying, war criminal, war criminal. And you know, I know that some Americans look at that and go, oh, that's too much, that seems rude, right? On the other hand, I mean, how many civilians died because of what Donald Rumsfeld did? So being rude to him may be the least you could do. And right. So I admire their courage in being able to risk arrest, to say sometimes what should be said to people that others don't have the courage to say. I'm glad somebody called Don Rumsfeld a war criminal and got attention for it. But in this case, like she said there, she's like, I wasn't going to say anything. All I did was laugh when you said he has a great record in treating all America's equal. Right. And that is a laughable proposition if you know Jeff Sessions' record.
Yeah.
So he said that, you know, about the Klan, I used to like them until I heard they smoked pot. So
wow.
Even if you think that's a joke, like joking around while an African American colleague is there about how much you like the Klan. I mean, and then he used to call that same guy boy. And there's a whole laundry list of things that Jeff Sessions did, let alone what he prosecuted and didn't prosecute. And so I think you're allowed to laugh at that. And if laughing is a crime now in America, right, we're in a deep state of trouble.
But come
so
on,
the judge made the right call.
I mean, we need to maintain decorum, right? And that was, again, brought up, which drives me nuts. It's just like the issue of the dress code in the House and how, oh, we need to maintain decorum. Like, as you know, these lawmakers are screwing over the American people left and right. To hell with your decorum,
right?
Yeah, and by the way, she had like a reflex reaction to what
happened.
Everybody
was laughing during this hearing, because it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was laughing at everyone who got up there and was like, he's a great person. One of the guys was like, you know, he had like his four token black people up there testifying about how great he was because they'd had meals over Dairy Queen. It's like, I don't trust you if you eat at Dairy Queen. But
no, wait a minute. Those are fighting words.
They are, and I'm willing to fight over that.
Can you get a sense that I eat at Dairy Queen?
Oh, we make way better decisions, I think. But you can't incite violent action and then get mad when people respond the same way, right? You're yanking her out of the meeting. She's supposed to just comply. Like, that notion of compliance is just problematic as it's executed by police in general, so I have a problem with that.
So that's a great point about what the judge is saying. It's like, you started the problem in the first place. Like, what is often discounted is state violence. So that often happens in war situations, but in this case, you're physically removing someone from the premises and you're doing it in the wrong way. So when she doesn't have a perfect reaction to it, you can't hold that against her. So like, don't waste more taxpayer resources trying to bring this woman back into court. Come on, that's preposterous. So, you know, again, I admire her courage, and I'm glad that she at least laughed in their face at that proposition.
All right, final story for you guys, a non-political story, but something super interesting. New parents are trying out the latest trend in having babies. They are doing something known as lotus birth, where they keep the placenta attached to the baby for a longer period of time, sometimes days. And the whole idea of this is that it helps improve the baby's immune system and has all sorts of positive physical benefits. Now, according to Attention, there's a rapidly growing birthing trend among young parents where they are delaying cutting the cord for days, letting it detach from the placenta on its own. So obviously, traditionally what happens is, you know, a nervous father comes in and cuts the umbilical cord. But in this case, that doesn't happen. According to those who practice and advocate for it, lotus birth facilitates an intense bond between mother and child. It's also claimed to help babies fight off infections, severe jaundice, and immune system diseases by keeping the baby attached to the mother's blood. However, there are a number of gynecologists that are speaking out against it, and they say, no, this actually increases the chance of infection. Amy Tudor, a gynecologist who blogs as Skeptical OB, called lotus birth, quote, a bizarre practice with no medical benefit and considerable risk, particularly massive infection. And a study in 2016 found that at least one lotus birth baby had to be readmitted to the hospital after her liver experienced some problems.
So, I'm the most open-minded man in America. Everybody knows this.
Oh yeah, definitely. Not when it comes to housing or underemployment. But anyway, let's move on.
Let's not get into that again. Okay, so as I was reading this story, I thought, well, look, having connection to the mother's blood, there's a reason you have the placenta inside the womb in the first place. There could be some logic in that. And I thought, but a couple of days, that doesn't seem right. Right? So,
no.
Yeah. And And then one woman said that iron and stem cells are delivered to the baby's stores. I don't know if that's an English vernacular. I don't know what stores are, but that's okay. I'm probably ignorant on that. But I was like, delivering iron and stem cells, maybe, maybe, but 3 days in, probably not, right? And then they said, oh, it also has metaphysical benefits. And I was like, I'm out. Okay, this is nonsense, total garbage, no way. But even that gynecologist that you quoted, Anna, said, no, actually, for a couple of hours, there is some logic in keeping the placenta. Even though it's kind of gross, right? But and
you
I don't
have a rotting piece of human whatever attached to your baby. It's rotting. It is rotting. They say like you can cure it with salt. No, don't cure it with salt. How about like cut it off and take care of your baby? Like that's you know what'll make your baby healthy? Taking care of it, not keeping a rotting piece of human tissue attached to it.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
And it's the lotus, but like it sounds
it
like
it sounds so nice, right? Like it's like a yoga thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is the first way I know it's strange and not medically sound. And you see the pictures of the moms and they're carrying their baby and then it's too much work. Why do you want more work? It's already hard enough the first couple days. Yeah. It's strange.
Look, there's a reason why God invented hospitals. So now a lot of people are gonna get at me and they're gonna say no, they give. And I have friends who delivered in the whole thing with the midwife and in the bathtub and it was in liquid. It's in.
If I were wealthy, what I would do is I would turn my bathroom into a spa-like hospital situation, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And have doctors there. Like I don't want a midwife, and no offense to midwives, I just you're not good enough. Like I need
you're not good enough.
Like you can be there, but I want a doctor. Like I want a doctor. What if something goes wrong? What if I'm losing too much blood? What is my midwife gonna do?
Like
call the doctor. Exactly.
Yeah, no. Ain't no way that anybody I know is given delivery without a doctor right there. Okay. Yeah. I mean, even in a hospital, the doctor doesn't get there unless like for hours and hours. It's actually quite frustrating.
Yeah.
So, but like for the doctor to be in a different building.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that. Okay. So now look, I know there's a whole range, and God bless you if you do that range, and we're probably being too judgmental. But the lotus birth, don't do that. Okay.
Yeah.
So the placenta, fine. You want to keep it for a couple minutes, couple hours.
You want to eat your placenta?
No.
Some women do it.
Or have a home birth. That's fine.
Oh yeah.
You know, those are fine.
Okay, but don't keep it past a couple of hours because it's dead cells at that point.
Yeah.
And they don't pass on nutrients. They pass on infection. You're gonna hurt your kids. So I don't care how nice it sounds, and I know there's lotus birth or whatever. No, don't do it. You're gonna get the poor kid sick. But like, remember, if we're supposed to believe in science, okay? Hashtag science. You know what a kind of birth I'm in favor of? Science birth.
I like drugged up births. Like, give me that epidural, make the pain go away. I want doctors everywhere.
Are you kidding me? Wendy walked into the hospital and she's like, okay, when do we do the fun thing with the epidural?
The fun
thing. Like, no, they're like, no, wait, you're not even anywhere near that yet. She's like, I know, but let's get to it. She's like, let's just do it right now. What are we waiting on?
Yeah.
All right. We're way out of time. Okay, yeah. God bless. Have a great weekend. Thank you guys.
Yeah.
Wait, you were on the first episode and the last episode?
Yeah, and the last episode, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So check out Ambria on Silicon Valley, that's fun.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.